Welcome to the RKT podcast. I'm Dr. Mike Lavelle, and in this episode, you can hear some of the discussion from the Researching the Castles conference. This was held by the Lancashire and Cheshire Antiquarian Society at the Grosvenor Museum in Chester in October 2022. The theme was a decade of 21st century archaeological research on castles in Northwest England and brought together many of the archaeologists involved in that work. In a pre-recorded talk, Rachel Swallow of Liverpool University talked about her study of Oldford Castle in Western Cheshire. Norman Redhead, formerly of the Greater Manchester Archaeological Advisory Service, explained some of the difficulties in studying castles in the heavily urbanised area of Greater Manchester. Kirsty Lloyd and Sarah Cattell, formerly of Salford Archaeology, explained their surprise at discovering two skeletons within the bailey at Halton Castle in northern Cheshire. And Richard Novell of the Castle Studies Trust discussed the evidence for slighting or deliberate destruction of castles within the region. I finished off the day by looking at the University of Salford's community excavations at Horton Tower in Lancashire. The discussion session involved all the speakers except for Rachel and was an opportunity to review some of the points raised during the conference. We're going to take questions from the audience. The first question at the back there.
So, is it possible that the castles which weren't slighted, and that was because they were owned by royalty? I think that probably factors into, especially, Lancaster Castle with King John. I mean, it's basically a royal asset. If Richard had confiscated it, he probably would have taken it under his own control rather than giving it to anyone else. Yeah, I think it was too valuable in that sense to slight his own thing. The Crown slighting their own property is very rare. There are a handful of cases. So Robert the Bruce in the 1310s, he slights a lot of Scottish castles to prevent the English from using them. And King John in 1216, when the French land, he starts demolishing some sites which he holds. These are ones which either he holds directly or he's in charge of the people. So he says, demolish those. Robert the Bruce, it's really effective. It resulted in perhaps dozens of castles being slighted. Actually, one of the chroniclers says, all the castles in Scotland, except for the one at Dunbar, were demolished. Bit of an exaggeration. For King John, I think his authority was too weak at that stage and he was largely ignored. So royalty will tend not to want to demolish their own castles if they can avoid it. So with the princes, that would definitely have factored in.
Next question, please.
So is there evidence of material from castles being sold off after they've been slighted? The records for the English Civil War are brilliant. Lila Rakowski's PhD goes into this in a lot of detail. It marries up with the archaeological evidence fantastically. And there are some really complex networks of people reusing material, bidding for contracts to dismantle stuff and take it away, and yeah, stuff being sold off. We just don't have that for the Middle Ages. I would say that it probably happened, but it just wasn't documented. Or if it was documented, they haven't survived. The resources themselves, so the timber, the dress stone, the rubble from inside the walls, would all be useful, would all have some kind of value. So I would not be at all surprised if in some cases it was sold off, either by the person in charge of this dismantling kind of freelancing, or I'm sure there'll be other circumstances as well. And you will sometimes find bits and pieces from a castle being reused elsewhere. Sometimes that's deliberate. For example, when Dolbadarn Castle in North Wales was demolished, timbers from it were reused in building Carnarvon Castle by the king. In other cases, it might be more kind of folklore based. So in someone's garden, you might have that bit came from the castle, or a bit in a local stone building, which just doesn't look quite right. And that's much harder to track. I think that would be a productive avenue for research.
It's probably worth saying, actually, that that's something that really did happen a lot at Alton Castle. You tend to get a lot of follies and extra. During the 19th century, when it was kind of held as this lovely tourist attraction, they made really good use of what stonework they had to build the folly walls, to change the walls around the edge of the castle. So I think anywhere you've got any kind of 19th century interest in anything that's a castle or related to a castle, anywhere like that is going to have a lot of interest with the new stonework.
Talking about Alton Castle, can I ask Sarah and Kirsty about how rare bodies in castles are?
Very, very, very rare. There is almost no evidence of bodies within castles. You could kind of understand it slightly more if there was evidence that that was definitely the chapel. That would make slightly more sense. But no, it is extremely rare.
Yeah, we'd be able to expand on the rarity factor if there was a comparable site. But there just isn't a comparable site for it.
I suppose there's the two royal sites with bodies in them. One is Windsor Castle, mm-hmm. The other is Stirling Castle, mm-hmm. But I suppose the clue there is that they are both royal sites.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they're absolutely exceptional.
Yeah, and plus they were put in when it was an administrative centre anyway. So it wasn't functioning as a household at that point.
Yeah. I think the other thing that is so interesting about Alton is, it's, as Kirsty was saying earlier, it's not just that these were just your average people that were going into the castle. We have got people with very specific disabilities, very specific physical issues. Maybe it was thought that, you know, well, either they were high-status individuals that should be buried in the castle because of some great idea about it, or alternatively, there was a link between that and their burial in the castle. But As Mike says, it's not a royal castle. It can't be compared with, I mean, Windsor, the scale of Windsor Castle is just completely off the scale when you look at Alton. So it's odd to say that.
And it's nothing to do with the Civil War siege in the 1640s.
No, I mean, you can see from the dating, we've got the potential for a possible date for the female at Civil War time, but the male is much, much earlier. I mean, if you look at the dating for the male, it was 1425 to 1470, and the new gatehouse was built in around 1450. So there was work going on, there was things happening in the castle at the time. There must have been a good reason for them being buried within the castle at that point, but we still can't work out who it was.
Very quick thought. What was the orientation on the graves? Were they east-west?
Pretty much. Yeah, they weren't quite exactly, but yeah.
As close as they could get it in the castle, to east west.
It strikes me that because they were buried about 50 years apart, even at the closest date, it seems that the people of the castle must have known that there was a burial there for it to be so close on the same alignment. Yeah. So similar factors in both cases. No idea what that could be. I don't suppose there was an almshouse there?
There's no evidence for it, but there's no reason to think there might not have been more close. To repeat the question, is it possible that as members of the family they were perhaps buried in the chapel because the church perhaps thought that it wasn't suitable for them? I think there's a possibility of that, but I think by this time the family were not in regular attendance at Alton. So if they were members of the family, they were probably quite distant, or they would have been transported quite a long way to get there, which I suspect is possible, but perhaps not too likely. It's a long way to come. There will have been a lot more delacy estates that they could have gone to that wasn't consecrated ground, I think.
Is there any evidence for a chapel, archaeologically?
Not archaeologically, no. There's, you can see, from, sorry, I'm...
Yeah, it's okay. There was one small fragment of potentially green-glazed floor tile. Very small, one, not in a secure context.
That's an awful lot to build a chapel.
It's way too much. I mean, the chapel.
There has been previously sort of the evidence of the windows that you see in the engraving. Mm-hmm. Oh yes, they look definitely very chapel-like. But actually, windows like that were all around the castle. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be unusual not to have any kind of religious area. But whether there was a full chapel, we can't say for definite, and we cannot definitely pinpoint it.
So we discussed two of the burials during the talk, but we did mention that there was a third set of human remains that came out. The third set were highly, highly disturbed, very fragmented, were not within what we would consider to be a secure context. They were not within a grave context at all. It was, yeah, very, very, very fragmented, and we only kind of confirmed that these were human in the lab off-site.
Wow.
I suppose the best phrase that can sum up that particular individual was, "Oh, crumbs, is that a bone?" Because there were such little fragments and so widely dispersed across the area.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the same area as the other burials, but very, very small fragments and very widely
dispersed.
Yes, I suppose you'd say they just all mingled in with that overburden. I think that's the other problem, because Halton Castle is covered with this homogenous layer of undateable material. There could be any age. They could be related to those burials. The fact that we have two burials in alignment with each other in the same place, then covered with this fragmentary remains of the third, suggests that there was probably this knowledge that the other two were there and perhaps the third person was interred. But then, because of the episodes of complete sweeping away the old things to build new, it means that anything that was there is being swept away completely, and obviously that's that third person, I think, has succumbed to that.
I mean, the flip side of that as well is this potential that third person was the initial interment there, and they were disturbed while depositing the first two and were part of the backfill of those two graves. But because, like you said, it's so mixed and mashed up, it was so difficult for us to kind of pinpoint that. Contextualising disability during the medieval period as a whole is a massive topic, to be honest. We've looked, you do get evidence of fractures, so if we take the male, for example, that horrific fracture and fusion in non-union that he had, obviously that would have an obvious disabling factor, and you see them engraved generally, along with standard kind of breaks as well. But disabling factors such as the female who looked like she had Marfan syndrome, that kind of analysis of skeletal remains is fairly new. Not new as in this decade, but recent, more recent than not. So we're learning more and more as we go along, and it's really down to kind of chemical analysis at this point to confirm certain things. So with Norton Priory, with the Paget's disorder that they have, that was only really kind of came about through like chemical analysis and much finer kind of almost forensic detail, so far more than what we could do on site.
I'm conscious time moves on. I just wanted to finish off by asking Norman a question, which is, Norman, what's the value of digging a castle, an earthwork castle, like Watch Hill?
Well, based on Richard's study of slighting, sort of thing you might expect to find if it was slighted, I would imagine plenty of evidence for burning and timber buildings, and evidence of deliberate slighting of the ramparts, filling in the ditches. That could be a problem there, because obviously we've had rock ploughing. But there's never been an excavation in the Bailey, so that would be a good place to start, just see what survival we do have there. And the 1976 excavations were quite inconclusive, but they only looked at a small part of the mine, so there's plenty of work to do, and we could actually establish shape of buildings and top of them all.
I can see the local group, Southrush Archaeology Group, perhaps putting a plan together with Castle Studies Trust in due course. Look, I'm going to bring things to a close there. Could I ask you to thank our speakers in the normal way for today's talks, please?